Good morning, everyone. Good morning, and thank you for joining us. We're starting a few minutes late, so I'll get things going now. Nice to see everyone here this morning. My name's Madeline McDonald. I'm the CAO for the Resort Municipality of Harrison Hot Springs, and I'm the Local Government Management Association's appointed representative to the board of your LGLA. I would like to start this session by acknowledging that we're meeting today on the traditional territory of the Coast Salish and Musqueam people. It is an honor for the LGMA to be partnering with the LGLA to bring you two sessions today on working together, making the most of collaborating with staff. As most of you will know, the LGMA is a nonprofit association representing municipal and regional district administrators, clerks, managers, and other senior local government professionals across BC. We were created back in 1919, where our organization is over 100 years old, by UBCM to promote excellence in local government management and to develop professional leadership and technical skills that are necessary to the work of local government staff. We are also strategically focused on developing and delivering practical training opportunities for local government professionals that meet the unique demands that we face under the Community Charter and the Local Government Act. This session focuses on the relationship between elected officials and staff and how to make this relationship successful and productive. Good conduct and good relationships between elected officials and staff are vital because the effective functioning of local government relies on both elected and appointed staff working together. Elected officials rely on the expertise and knowledge of staff to provide you with the information that you need to make good decisions for your communities. And staff rely on clear direction from councils or boards to guide our work. We're very lucky to be joined today by two people who together have decades of practical experience in elected and staff service with BC local governments. We have with us today Christina Benty, the former mayor of Golden, who is now an expert in community engagement and asset management, and Ron Matusi, who spent 22 years with the City of Kelowna, first as the city's planning director and 11 years as the city manager. Please join me in welcoming our speakers.
Okay, you're on.
All right, good morning, everyone. And thank you for coming out. Are you guys ready to have some fun? No, I'm not gonna sing today. I'm saving that for asset management. Actually, I'm super excited to be here because usually I get pegged as the asset management evangelist. And so this time I get to talk about something else. So I'm thrilled to be here. And Ron and I have, we have talked about doing a session like this several times. And in some ways, what you're gonna be doing is listening in on a coffee conversation with Ron and I, because we get together for coffee every once in a while and we have a chat about these very things that we're gonna be chatting about today. So thank you for being here. That's why we've got the little setup here, our little our bar stools, but we're not in a bar, we're in a coffee shop. It's 8:30 in the morning, right? All right. So just so I can get a sense of who is in the room, will you please stand up if this is your first term? And this is your first term, not like in elected office, not you did terms before and then you came back, but just this whole experience of being an elected official is brand new to you. All right, give these guys a hand, yes. Thank you. Awesome, that's great. And who is around this room that has done three or more terms as an elected official? They don't have to be in a succession, but three or more terms. Wow, awesome, all right. Give them a hand. Good. So, whether you are here as a new elected official, and you know you've been in just a little bit longer than a year, or whether you've been in office for a very long time, what I'm going to invite you to do is to bring your curiosity. Because here's what happens, right? You sit in office for your long time, and you're like, oh, I know that, I got that down. So I'm gonna ask you to actually come with somewhat of a beginner's mind and bring that curiosity. Because what Ron and I are gonna be doing today, it's gonna be conversational between Ron and I. We're gonna be chatting about a few things. It's also going to be interactive. So you're going to be doing some work around your tables. And just so you know, we're gonna be moving you around. There's a couple pretty skimpy tables. We're gonna be moving people around. We'll do that later though. And then you're gonna be reporting out. And then there's gonna be some opportunity for questions and conversation. So like I said, let's have some fun. Invite that curiosity. And let's have a co-created conversation. Okay? Awesome. So like I said, we're really pleased that you're here. So the session today is about collaborating with staff. So do we have any staff in the room? How about the staff stand up for a second? Let's see who you are. All righty, we go. You two are not staying at that table. Awesome. That's right. Give them a hand. That's fantastic. So here's what we're going to
be. Did you see how reluctant they were? No.
Yeah. I did see that, actually. Yeah. I was kind of watching over in that corner there. All right. So today is about, we're going to be talking about collaborating with staff. So here are the things that I want you to get curious about. I want you to get curious about role clarity. Okay? Having a conversation about who does what. We're going to be talking about conflict, so the potential areas for conflict, and how to pay attention to those, and how to minimize conflict, or at least have healthy conflict that's productive, right? We as Canadians are often, we're somewhat conflict averse, and our conflict is often really insidious instead of healthy. So having that healthy conflict that actually leads to good decisions and healthy, productive, functional, trusting relationships, because that's actually what you want to be moving towards, right? We're going to be talking about how to build a collaborative work environment with your staff, and when to know that it's time to get some help, when things are going sideways, and what do you need to pay attention to in terms of when and how to get help. Make sense? Awesome. All right. So I can tell you from my experience, part of the reason that we're having this conversation today is the fact that I had this experience. I was elected to council in 2002. And of course, you're told, don't play with the trains, right? You're told, stay away from the trains. And the very people that were telling me, some of my counselors that had sat around the table for a long time, who were saying, don't play with the trains, were saying one thing and doing another, right? So their behavior wasn't matching what they were saying to me. And oftentimes, I mean, that's a human proclivity, right? That we say we believe one thing and we do another. And so you may be able to parrot back what the role is. Uh-oh. You might be able to parrot back what it is that the role is. So you may understand the theory, but how do you actually put it into practice? Right? How do you practice it, and how do you integrate it in your own behavior? So just knowing it doesn't mean that you're actually doing it. And it's important to remember that it's an ongoing dance. And ideally what you're doing is you're moving towards getting better, not getting worse, right? So that relationship, that role clarity, that collaboration, it's a dance, right? And that's what we want to be talking about today. So we are going to talk a little bit about, right, who does what? And how do you like my little drawing here? So we're going to be talking about the fact that And I want to say a couple words about the organizational chart, because the understanding what the organizational chart is really important. And oftentimes we draw the organizational chart as a hierarchical system, and it's actually not. It is who does what. So I want you to think about role clarity. Is what is your job as an elected official? What is the job of staff? What is the role of staff? What's the role of the public? And understanding that each has their own lane. Each has their own very distinct responsibility. And there's some overlap, and we're going to be talking a little bit about that overlap. Right, Ron?
You bet.
Yeah, we're going to be talking a little bit about that overlap. But in a really simplistic system, the job of elected officials is the why and the what. What are the services that we provide to our community? At what level? And what are people willing to pay for? Right? Marrying that, those two things. And why? Why do we provide those services? What's important? So representing the constituents on what do they want in terms of services and what are they willing to pay for?
I think that's a great point. I have gone through in my career, you know, 40, 50 page reports that I've handed back to the staffer and say, you never answered why. You've told us how, and you've told us what you're going to do, and you've have these great tables and charts and flow charts, but you never really answered why. And for the elected person, why is really the most important question. Why are we doing this? There are other ones that fall out of it, but if you don't know why we're doing it, you're not going to get very far.
Yeah, and I think that's important too, to have, again, that co-created dialogue, because oftentimes we do something and we never ask why we're doing it, and should we stop doing it? Right? We continue to provide a service. We have outdated bylaws and policies that don't make any sense anymore in the current environment. And we never ask, and we often never ask why. So asking that question, why? Right? The why and the what. And then staff's job is the who and the how. Who's going to deliver the service and the how? Right? And That's the difference between the political body and the apolitical body, right? That what's very important to understand oftentimes is that the public thinks they're electing you to do this, right? They think that they want you to fix this, the how and the who. More the how, right? Does that resonate with some people, right? And they're very confused about the fact that actually you're elected for the why and the what. Hey, Ron?
Yeah, and I think that is the problem. I think there's a huge misconception as to what elected people do and what staff do. I spent my whole career with people saying, who does that Ron Mattucci think he is? He's running the city. Yeah, I am. They pay me to do that. It's part of my job. I know the part I'm supposed to do, but it leads to a huge conflict in the community, and I think it's a failing of our education system. I'm sorry if there's any educators in the room, but I think it's a failure that we don't teach that basic physics, because it's a problem we deal with a lot in local government.
Yeah, and I agree with you. I think because civics isn't clearly understood, the public, the election cycle, the conversation is often focused on what's wrong, instead of actually and who and how we're going to fix it, as opposed to the what and the why, and it creates some misperception. How many of you got elected and then got to the table, and a year in you're like, this is completely different than I thought it was, right? I'm supposed to be a policy setter. My job is to think strategically. Not to do things, but to actually think strategically about my community, and not just for the people that voted for me, but actually for, I would say, seven generations from now. That's actually how you should be thinking, right?
So starting to move into her asset management.
Oh,
here.
Yeah, whoops.
just calling that.
Okay. Okay, but I didn't use the word, so.
I know. It's still the same. Still the same, Christine.
Yeah, no, I know, right? So that's the kind of thinking that you want to be employing. You distracted me.
Sorry.
From my rant.
Sorry.
No, that's okay. Right? So that's the kind of thinking that you need to be employing, and then communicating that out to the public that elected you. And so that, like you said, civics isn't taught. It doesn't mean that it's not your obligation to actually be an advocate for those civics and to educate the folks that you have the opportunity to educate, right? So do you have anything you want to add to that?
Oh, now I get to.
Yeah,
now no, you get no, a turn. No. Keep going. I'm spent a whole career deferring to the mayor, so just carry on.
So, like I said, this is a dance, not a fight. And I was actually asking Ron this morning for a football analogy, because I think football is. I don't know much about football, just so we're really clear. But what I do know is that the different people on the football field all have a different role, right? We have, so the kicker is not the lineman, right? And the lineman is not the kicker. They have very distinct roles. When they carry out their roles, it's actually a bit of a sweet machine. It works really well. When they don't, when they try to be something that they're not, that's when the interference happens, right? So we're going to talk a little bit about that today. Hey?
Should we get started?
Yeah.
Okay. So what we're going to do is ask each other questions and then interrupt each other at various times to make a point, as I already started doing. So the first thing we're going to talk about are those roles. And so Christina, you know, We hear it. You've heard it. If you come to LGLA, you know, policy versus operations. Policy versus operations. But it's not really that simple.
Yeah. No, it's not, right? It's particularly when you're trying to figure out how to think about a policy. And I would actually say that one of the challenges elected officials face is a policy comes onto the table, and it often gets glossed over because it requires a level of rigor at reading and considering all of the policy aspects of policy that need to be taken into consideration. And one of the things that Ron and I were talking about is the fact that you may say, well, if I'm the policy setter, why is it that staff are writing the policy? Right?
Yeah, and I think that leads to a lot of often misunderstanding, even again with the community, because how many people got elected and said, boy, what I want to do is just write policy and run the city from a policy perspective, right?
Way to go!
There you go, okay.
I bet you didn't the first term.
There's always one. There's always one. But that line is somewhat blurred. Although council, you know, debates and deliberates and ultimately sets that policy, you know, often that policy is directed from the ground up. It's often, you know, your finance director will will come forward to council and say, what's going to be our policy on our assets? This term, are we going to be investing in new infrastructure, or is our focus renewal? And I mean, that's a very simple but very important policy decision that you'll have to make. That may not be the first thing on your mind as you first elected and come in the room to think in those terms. So that notion of policy, it's not that all the policy must come from above down to the organization. It's kind of two-way. And the policy that local government electeds generate are often based on the hopes and dreams of the community, right? Elected people deal in stories. I was at Tim Hortons, and Bill said, you know, we really should use the soccer field for the fall fair rather than the parking lot it's in. Okay, that now comes forward. That story now comes forward, and somebody has to think about it and implement it and deal with it. Staff, on the other hand, you know, staff deals with, we like precedent. We like consistency. We like stability, right? And so in that exchange of even policy, there's some differences between our perspectives on those two things. So I don't think it's as simple as council sets the policy, staff implement. No, I think sometimes policy is derived from the departments up, and sometimes policy is derived from council and then implemented. But it's always debated, discussed, and decided on at the council table.
And I think where the collaborative approach comes from is that, again, that you're recognizing that it's a co-created dialogue and that it's back and forth as you're creating that policy. So, for example, let's use a recreation fees bylaw, right? And staff identify that the recreation fees have not been up for discussion. The policy is old, it's outdated, there's no cost recovery target conversation, there's no determination on what serves the public good as in terms of what serves the private good, right? So then when a delegation comes to council and says, or to the regional district and says, I want to use a facility at no cost, we want it for free, that there's no discussion about the fact that there is actually a cost to utilize that facility. You may decide to allow a group to use it at no cost to them, but that there is a cost. And so there's no direct connection between what the cost to provide service and what the service actually is, right? There, that linkage is missed. So staff identify that we have a policy gap. We need to renew this policy. And so what I usually suggest is that staff identify, here's where the gaps are, and here's the decision points that I need from elected officials. Here are the decision points I need from you. And so then there's a discussion that actually leads to, that's a back and forth conversation of curiosity where you get to decide, are we going to have a cost recovery target? Are we going to shoot for 10% or 50% cost recovery? Is everything going to be free? You know, is it going to be free to the user, or is everyone going to pay for the user? How are you going to structure that? And so then staff identify, here's the areas where I need some clear direction from the elected officials in terms of where we should be going. And then it's a back and forth conversation, and then the bylaw or the policy is developed, and it comes back to elected officials, and they say, yep, that reflects our conversation, or no, that's not exactly what we want to achieve, and it's instead of information lobbing over the wall of elected officials versus the staff, and just throwing information back and forth over the wall, it's actually a dropping the wall and having a conversation, realizing that staff's job is facts and data, options and consequences, and then you as the elected officials get to decide, have those decision points on the what and the why.
Yeah, and I think it's unfortunate that, you know, because of some real rampant abuse in the past, that, you know, they've really tightened up a lot of the rules around meetings, and again, I don't suggest that those throw out the window, but I think one of the things that it has done is curtailed a lot of good informal decision. Not backroom, hey, let's do this and then go out and vote, which is why it was put in place to stop. But really good kind of informal discussion. I've had a lot of experience dealing with councils who were, you know, in the council chamber at loggerheads. And yet when, you know, they sat down at lunch, you know, you could start saying, well, you know, you guys actually don't really disagree all that much. There's a small band of things you disagree on. You actually agree on most things, but it takes sometimes that informal discussion to really. So I think that's important, and the wall coming down, and that finding ways to actually discuss these things and building up that relation and trust. So let's talk about when things go bad.
Yeah, and exactly, and it's important to actually do a bit of a temperature check to check and see, you know, when are things going poorly. And often an environment, and this is why I drew this, when you have low levels of trust, you've got between the political body and the apolitical body, you've got this impermeable line that happens, right?
City manager will hunker down, right? Yep. Shields come up. Yep. I'm protecting staff. You guys can fight up there. We're just going to hunker down and wait this out for a while.
Yeah.
And but that's because of a lack of trust.
Yeah. So knowing that that's when that's happening, that you've got low levels of trust, and you need to find out what's going on, why is there a low level of trust? Because in higher levels of trust, and this is the green line, it's semi-permeable, right? There's an ease of communication, and a couple of the things that I identified that when you know when things are going wrong, when there's an absence of healthy curiosity, not accusatory curiosity, but when there's when somebody asks a question, why are you doing that? There's a big difference between that and, can you help me understand why we're going in this direction, or why are we?
Why are there
that?
So many rabbits and deer? I had those ones.
So there's different ways to engage in, you know, we can use questions as weapons. That's not curiosity. Yeah. And one of the things I think that, you know, we always talk about is enter with inquiry. Be curious. Ask your questions with genuine curiosity. I think, too, also an absence of humanity. And you can kind of sense that from a gut level. Mm-hmm. When elected officials stop seeing staff as humans, and staff stop seeing elected officials as humans, when you don't understand each other's world, that's a sign that things are going sideways.
And it's difficult because, you know, we talk about impassioned, you know, public service, objective, providing the facts, you know, coming up with the recommendations, but at the end of the day, we're human. I would rather have a staff person who is passionate and sometimes has to be reined in and told, you know, it wasn't personal. They didn't take your recommendation, but it wasn't personal. There were other reasons why they didn't follow it. I'd rather deal with that disappointment, you know, than have a robotic staff person that provides facts and really doesn't care. Take this, take that, fine with me, I'll go implement what you want. I mean, I don't think we want that. But one of the red flags that I think you also have to watch for is when the information flow stops. When council starts feeling as though information's not coming forward. And sometimes, from a staff perspective, that happens when, staff is guarded. You know, if you shoot the messenger, guess what? There's not going to be too many messages coming forward, right? And so one of the first signs that there's actually trouble is a feeling that not all the information's being transmitted. Something's missing. And that sometimes starts down that path of there's a problem. I don't trust staff. And vice versa. Staff is saying, there's a problem. I'm not sure I'm sticking my neck out here. And I think you have to nip that one in the bud. I think you have to reset, and you have to reset soon, because that'll quickly end into a dysfunctional situation where work isn't getting done.
Yeah, and I was thinking about the fact that what's also true is when you're getting too much information. when staff reports are so long and they have all the history attached to it, because the staff are trying to cover their butt. They want to make sure that you have the reams and reams and years of research done, because they know you're going to find a way to stick it to them, right? So they're going to make sure that their staff reports are outrageously long, not as a revenge tool, but actually as a protection to them. They're going to find a way to make me feel uncomfortable, and they're going to find a way to try to stick it to me. So I'm just going to provide them with all the information so that I've covered my butt, right? When there's this high risk environment of risk averse, and again, when there's this lack of curiosity, when there's a lack of honest conversations, when there's a lack of an ability to hold tension in the room, and people aren't taking it personally, right? And they're not assigning evil intent. When you start assigning evil intent to somebody else without really understanding what their world's like and you start making up stories, that's when it becomes dangerous. And part of the role of the CAO is, and this goes back to what you said earlier, is actually coaching their staff. You know what? You provide options and consequences with council, and you're really impassioned about this, or to council and to the board, and you're impassioned about this this option. When elected officials choose a different option, don't take it personally, right? It's not personal.
And I think sometimes the mistakes that a CAO makes, especially dealing with a novice council, I was fortunate. I ended up my first couple of terms veterans. They were on council a very long time. They were great to work with. They knew the policies. They knew their role. It was easy. And then I ended up with a completely rookie council. And it was a big adjustment for me to now not be a CAO as border collie, trying to herd people, because I think we need a chicken bylaw. I think we need this bylaw. I think we need that bylaw. Let's save the world. Can we become mayors for peace? And all of a sudden, it was just a completely different world. And I think it was really difficult for me to step back and realize that as much as my job as the city manager, and as long as I'd been in this community and as a professional in local government, it was not my job to save the city from council. And that's how people see it. And that's how your staff sometimes see it. I mean, I'd have my communications director say, "Oh, Ron, they can't say that. You know, like, that's just going to be a disaster." And I'd say, you know, with time and experience, I'd say, "It's not going to be so bad." You know, like, we explained what they want. They really want to do that. I know, but that's not, like, that's just, no. They're going to do it, and that's fine. Well, we'll be picking up the pieces. And I say, yeah, that's our job too. You know, they're democratically elected. They have the right to make that decision. We've done our job to the best of our ability. I'm satisfied with that. I mean, this goes off the rails, and I see that I didn't do my job as well as maybe I should have. But at this point, if that's the way they vote, we support them and we come back. And so sometimes the CAO has to coach staff who are even more ready to jump in the lifeboats when those kind of decisions. And I think it's important for CAOs to, to let council make their decisions. And even if you feel that it's not good, and state why, but at the end of the day, they're the elected people, and it's not your job to save the city from council.
That's a good point, and I'm going to put on my asset management hat just for a second, because one of the things that when I'm coaching staff about asset management, one of the things that they're often nervous about is here's what the numbers are saying, and it's not good. Like, when I ask them what keeps you up at night, they're like, asset sustainability keeps me up at night. And so I'm like, have you had that conversation with your elected officials? And oftentimes what they're trying to do is get perfect data in front of you, because, again, they're scared to kind of have that, here's what we're working on, here's what we're developing, here's what we know so far. It's not perfect. And again, in an environment where there's low levels of trust, the staff are going to want to have perfect information before their elected officials, because they're nervous about getting thrown onto the bus. In a collaborative environment that's semi-permeable, that you actually allow for more dialogue, right, about the information, so that it's a shared responsibility. But at the end of the day, like Ron just said, I often tell staff, let council die, or elected, let the board die on the sword. Like, it's their decision. They get to decide, right? Let them take the consequences of their decision. Don't try to own it. That is the challenging role of an elected official, is to own your decisions. And oftentimes, particularly for the new ones, you're like, I just inherited some bad decisions that were made in the past. But you know what? I guarantee you that the people that made decisions in the past, that they had as good as intention of serving their community and doing the right thing, as you did. Their story and information was different, but I guarantee you that their heart for the job was exactly the same.
I once had a counselor say to me, "This isn't fair. I just got elected and I have to deal with this horrible issue that the previous council left me." And I said, "Yeah, and remember a month ago when you cut the ribbon in the new pool? That was approved by counselors who put their neck on the line for that wonderful pool you got to cut the ribbon on." So, you know, back and forth, it all plays out over time.
Yeah, and you really are passing the baton. I walk around my community now and I can see, I'm like, "Oh, I remember when we talked about that. We rezoned that area, and 20 years later, we're now seeing something happen on there. It's about time." But these, again, organizational patience is really important. And the reality is staff is long going to outlive the elected officials, right? So being mindful of building that collaborative relationship, building that trust, creating an environment where it's safe to have difficult conversations is really important.
CAO has to speak truth to power, but if that is not rewarded, they won't do it. Right? People have to be comfortable and trust that that's what council wants. And so you have to be in a position to be able to accept a recommendation or advice that you don't want to hear, and be okay with that. "Yeah, that's great advice. Probably the right advice. I'm not following it." And vice versa, the CAO has to be able to understand that at some point in time you're going to make your decision based on a very different set of circumstances and community needs that they're not operating under. And so that's part of that dialogue. So let's talk about collaboration and why it's important.
Well, actually, I was gonna ask you.
I was getting to that. I got the signal. It's 10 minutes. I got to keep things moving, Your Worship.
So I was going to ask you about the one employee model. Do you want to talk a little bit about that and why it was designed? What's the value? What does a healthy relationship look like between elected officials and their one employee?
Yeah, you know, that's an area that, you know, people love or hate. A lot of times people come in and really hate it if they think that they have a bone to pick with the way roads are plowed, and they're going to get in there and they're going to make sure those roads are plowed right. And then they find out that, no, that's actually not your job, and there's this guy called the CAO, and he's the one employee of council. And some people don't like that. It's really important. I see Allison in the back of the room. She did all this research, but you know, that was created because at a time of reform, and it was created as a point to have, you know, professional staff deal with the day-to-day. And it's very much, believe it or not, came out of the business community that wanted local government to run efficiently and business-like. Very corporate, right? So you have the board of directors and you have the president that runs the day-to-day, and the two have their very distinct roles. And incidentally, they also thought there was no place for politics in local government because it was about the efficient and effective delivery of service. And so they saw that model, and the model of having a professional that actually runs the day-to-day actually goes back in our history. So it's not some new thing that George Kopp dreamt up, although he's a big proponent. And if you don't know George Kopp yet, you'll meet him, I'm sure. So it's important, but why is it important? It's not only important for the efficient running of the city, but it's also important, and I think when people say to me, "Well, why can't I go directly to the manager of works and ask for Bill's road to get plowed?" I said, "Well, you're a control freak if you keep me from doing that, but it's really about disrespecting your fellow councillors. Because at the end of the day, the decision has to be made at the council table. And if I happen to like you, we get along, and you come to me, and I'm granting you this power to change the way we plow roads or to get your agenda on the table, you're actually short-circuiting council." And so I never saw it as disrespect for the CAO. I actually saw it as disrespect for council. Because in many ways, when the CAO is told this is what council wants and implements it, it's a council decision. And your power derives from council, not as individual members. So the one employee model, I think a lot of people misinterpret it as something invented by power-hungry CAOs to keep a, and you know, some of us are, but keep control over the city. But actually, it's about a check and balance, and it's about the power of council and a respect for counsel in that decision, so everybody gets treated the same.
Yeah, I think that that's a really important message, is recognizing that that staff take direction from the direction set by elected officials. They don't take direction from individuals. They don't take direction from your conversation around the table. Because I've actually heard that before. I was like, well, we talked about it. Didn't you do it then? Right? But you didn't actually pass a resolution or a bylaw or a policy. Right? And so staff can't react to your conversation or without direction. So clear direction. And one of the things that's really important is to go back when you're, you know, when you're looking at a resolution or a policy, make sure that you're asking staff, is that clear? Do you have clear direction? If you don't, what is the intention? So it comes back to, it's a back and forth co-created conversation to achieve the most clarity that you can, so that staff have clear direction. So that when they're carrying out that direction, and you don't like how they're doing it, that's where the disconnect can happen sometimes. And that's why it's important to recognize this is that's the who and the how it gets carried out. Your job is that clear direction through resolutions, policies, bylaws, strategic planning. Your job is to provide the resources, so staff, you can't provide staff direction and then provide them no resources to do it. Right?
You actually can.
Okay, but you shouldn't.
I've experienced it. Doesn't work very well, but yeah. So we just take it from something else. Right? Yeah. There's only limited resources.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and that's, you know, that's the bad habit of riding the racehorse for 24 hours until it fully just falls apart, right? So your term might not, you might not feel the fall apart of riding the racehorse that long. Are we close to, okay, all right.
Okay, so let's go back. It was about collaboration. Mm. And so how do you build a team? And I think if you've heard the message, it's really about building trust. And you know, you can only do that on a very personal level, right? There's no magic formula. You know, it's about sitting down and being open to that conversation, to have some empathy for your fellow counselors who, you know, it's really important to know why they were elected and why they wanted to be elected and what was important to them, and keeping that in the back of your mind, and also having some empathy for the staff who, I can tell you, in virtually every case, really mean well. I mean, sure, there's some bad apples out there, I'm sure, as there are on both sides of the line. But generally speaking, they're there to do as best a job as they think they can do. And so I think it's really important to have that open conversation. Take advantage of those times where you could have those informal conversations about what's important and why.
Yeah, and I was thinking about a story that you and I talked about yesterday, and that is about the engineer who left his work at in working with local governments and said that he was working for a consulting firm. Because he said elected officials actually take my advice. When I was working for the city, they didn't.
Yeah. He said as a consultant,
they thought
now,
I was an idiot.
As a consultant now, when they ask my advice and I give it, they take it. As opposed to when he was the engineer for the city. Yeah.
So again, recognizing that, you know, in general, your staff have years of education, expertise in their field, and they want to provide you with the best information so that you can make good decisions, and so that you will understand what the consequences of those decisions. So, like I said, when the walls go up, when something doesn't feel right, when the communication flow is not healthy, then you know something is wrong. So what we're going to be doing now is we're going to move into the group work.
Yeah.
Yes, exactly. So here's what we would like you to do. I want, if you have been in office 3 years or more, and you look around your table, and you know two people or more, What I want you to do is get up and find people that you don't know very well. They may look familiar, but you don't know them very well. Okay? And we want more than two people at the table. So we'd like you to fill up your tables differently. And once you've got a seat, we'll be giving you some work to do. So if you've had three or more terms, and
a lot of criteria to remember.
Yeah, if you've had three or more terms as an elected official, then go find people that you don't know. Okay?
15 minutes.
Oh, yes. Oh, okay. Right. Oh, yeah, of course. Okay.
I think we hit most of the bullets eventually.
All right, so you've moved around a bit. I want you to try to fill up those tables. Can I get you three to actually find empty, because otherwise it's just going to be the three of you. So find empty tables. So fill up the tables for the conversation, please. Can I bug you guys to maybe, okay. I know, it's okay. They've moved around a bit. Okay, so you've got a piece of paper here on your table that says, in the group at your table, you're going to use, and we're going to give you 5 minutes per question. And then you're going to be reporting out on the last question. So I want you to have some conversation about what are some of the ways that you collaborate effectively with staff. So that's your first question. You have 5 minutes, and I want you to record some of those, okay? All right, so you've got 5 minutes for that first question.
Thank you.
next question. Question number two. Start capturing some of those thoughts. The dance. So you're on question two right now. All right, we want you to move to that final question because we're going to be getting you to report out a couple of you to report out. So move to that final question. All right. Where are you from? Hollywood. Okay. Beautiful. Okay. Oh my gosh. Yeah.
I've been on the committee.
Yep.
Very interesting.
I bet.
Here I am.
All right, so you're talking about that third question, because we're going to be bringing you back in the room shortly, to the big room.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we didn't talk about it, yeah. Oh, we'll pick it up next time. Okay.
Okay, so you're wrapping up at your tables now. You're determining what it is that you're going to report out, and I'm going to ask for a couple tables to share. So should I bring you back in the room by singing the asset management song?
Yeah. She wanted to.
All right. So come on back into the room. And we're going to talk about that last question. Okay. So I'm going to look. Ron and I are going to walk around the room. And we are going to look for a table to volunteer and share a little bit about their discussion. What is the one thing you could do differently when you return to your organization to collaborate effectively with your staff? So looking for a volunteer first before I start picking on folks. Who's going to...
There's a table. Somebody got voluntold.
So please tell me your name, how long you've been an elected official, and...
You lucked out.
What are you going to do differently?
Hi, I'm Edwin Creve, and I'm electoral area director in the Comox Valley Regional District. I think Chris Fields said yesterday that when you go home, hug your CAO. But my wife has always taught me that you have to ask before you hug them.
Yes, definitely.
To get permission, that's okay. We talk about staff not being risk takers, and it's hard to get them to be more nimble and more candid, that they're by training would probably answer you the diplomatically correct way to answer you. So we also talked about different things about people that email directly to department staff and bypass CAOs. These are no-nos. And also that sometimes it's good to not blindside staff at meetings, but to give them a warning that you have issues with this or that, and you're going to raise this or that, just so that they're not. And I like what you said about praising in public and being critical in private. I think that's very important.
Awesome. Yeah, you know what? Yeah, that's right. Give me a hand. So I like the no surprise rule. No surprises from your fellow elected officials around the table. No surprises to staff. Keep the no surprise rule. It's not a WWF, right? It is a team, and the people around the table are your teammates, and the staff are your teammates, and everybody just has a different role, right? So keeping that in mind. All right.
Okay, I'm Sue Ellen Fass. I'm with Bowen Island Municipality, small community, and the Islands Trust. The things that different people had different ideas about what they were going to do when they got back, one of them was me. I'm going to get to know our new CAO. We're hiring. Closing date is February the 14th. But I've been one of the, as described, independent satellite kind of counselors who hasn't really spent much time with their previous CAO. So I'm going to change that. We had somebody say they're going to talk to the CAO and managers together so everybody's on the same page, or so that staff know more about what's going on in the community, that kind of thing. Bill's going to encourage the CAO to have one-on-one with counselors. As mayor, he does, but some counselors work and they don't have the same relationship with the CAO, which is sort of me too. And treat all elected people consistently is one of the other messages from a current CAO at our table. And I missed one person. Did you want to add? No. Okay, thank you.
And that's a good point. My door was always open, recognizing that counselors may not be there during the day or whatever, but I would go out of my way to meet with every single counselor and make sure that the door was open so that they could come in with if they had an issue they wanted to talk about or a concern. Door always open.
Yeah, and I think it's a good idea to have quarterly check-ins where you get together with your CAO and ask them, so what keeps you up at night?
Yeah, good question.
Right? What's keeping you up at night? And another really important question is, how do the staff perceive us? The rest of the staff. And then, instead of getting defensive, listen. And listen with curiosity. Because you know what's going to happen? If you get defensive, then shields go up, right? The door closes, you reduce trust. So.
And besides, a good CAO will tell you nicely.
All right, who else had their hand up?
Behind you, Christina.
What's that?
Right behind you.
Ah, there we go.
Hello, my name's Michelle Babchuk. I hail out of the city of Campbell River as a counselor, and I'm also the chair of the Strathcona Regional District. So I have a bit of a view on both of those organizations and the different types of communications that happen because of the different needs between counselors and municipal directors on a board and electoral area directors. So having a procedure within those organizations on how we actually approach staff, I think is important to have, because we can work policy or any sort of rules and regulations in your model there, But where this breaks down for most people is in the expectations around communications. And one of the examples that was brought to our table here was we have an electoral area director who wanted to have a discussion about garbage pickup. He didn't appreciate the way he was addressed in that conversation by his senior staff member. But there was no realization at that particular point on what that staff member was dealing with on that particular day, and or from the staff member on what he was dealing with that day, as he had 5 million phone calls and emails. So there has to be some sort of expectation level put on the table before you're actually having those conversations, and doing it in a respectful way where you are letting them know you're coming in. You're not just marching in the door. And I will give examples from my own regional district where, you know, we have a couple of directors that their expectation of those are my staff, and if I email you, you better get back to me in 5 minutes. And if you're not back to me in 5 minutes, they get a text. And if you don't get back to them in 5 minutes, they get a email. Okay. And then they get a phone call. And then 15 minutes later, you get the, what the heck, are you mad at me email? How come you haven't answered me? So until you have those conversations about expectations and communication, your outcomes are always going to be marred in crap. I can't think of a better word, because the outcomes are the easy piece. It's the relationship and the communication on how we get there.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. And our system doesn't allow for those candid conversations and that level of honesty around what the expectations are. Again, I was elected and nobody told me how to deal with those things. And I was actually more interested in that than anything, right? And so having some clear expectations on, hey, how do we best communicate? How do we best share information? What are the channels I can go to? And this is where that curiosity comes in. Get curious instead of making some assumptions about how things work, right? So getting engaging in that level of curiosity. All right, another table. Okay.
Nope. Oh. One more.
Dean is my name, City of Colwood, first-term council member, and a thought struck me. I was brand new, and all they knew of me was what was posted on the internet and my election webpage, I guess. And I do have a real job, and I've been a police officer for a long time. So when I stepped into City Hall, my community where I reside, I found there was a lot of fear and trepidation. Oh my God, I'd come in and people would scurry in the other direction. So I took a moment to go around and really engage, at least learn who the people were. And you hear their names and you see their reports, but just to sit down with them for a few minutes and maybe take some of the fear out of it, because I realized that I was an unknown commodity to them. I was in a new role, and they saw me perhaps in a certain light, and the reality is, it's a pretty good, talented bunch of people. I do find that we're a solid, small to medium-sized community of about 18,000, and I've come to learn in CAO land and staff, and the staff world, that we're a bit of a stepping stone too. So I think this is an ongoing process, because just since I've been there, 3 or 4 senior staff members have changed. So I think it's something to be mindful of, that you have to extend the welcoming mat each time there's a change in staff as well.
Yeah, that can provide lots of challenge. And actually, that's a sign that things, it may or may not be a sign, but sometimes it's a sign that things are going sideways in your organization if you have huge staff turnover all the time at the senior management level, right? It's like, check outside your community. Does your governing body have a good reputation as a governing body in terms of how they're relating to staff? That's actually important. So we have, I think, 10 to 15 minutes left for some questions. And so we don't want to miss that opportunity to kind of, Ron and I are happy to kind of take questions and banter with you a little bit. What are you curious about?
And if your table didn't get addressed, then you can pretend it's a question and make a statement. You guys do that. You guys do that every meeting. So.
Hi, Thank you very much. Michael Riley, City of Kamloops, first time councillor. Question, when we're talking about the one staff, I get the model, I understand it, it makes sense. Where I feel there's some conflict or perceived conflict is when councillors will go out on their own and speak directly to directors, which, you know, we have four in Kamloops, so I kind of get that. But then they will go a step further and talk to the managers or the supervisors. Yeah. We're all supposed to be playing by the same rules of the one employee or the director level. But then, you know, you start feeling like maybe you're not doing your job enough, or they're getting quick responses back. And, well, maybe you're not doing your job. So you start almost competing with the team that you're supposed to be representing. And it's not just the newly elected councillors. It would be long-term councillors that have been there a long time. So I guess it's hard, because as much as we're on the same team, you get into a competitive field, and it shouldn't. And that creates undue stress on the staff. And I just don't think there's a need for it. So it's, how do you go about dealing with that and addressing that? I mean, a councillor is one thing. A mayor or CEO, like, I don't really know where that line is.
It's a team effort, because at the end of the day, the CEO is somewhat limited in their ability to chastise councillors. They could bring up that this is happening. And I'd always say, you know, you can keep approaching my staff, and I tell my staff, look, if they keep approaching you, I want to know. And just remember, I can't fire the counselor, but I can fire you. You know, so let's put a lid on it. And I think it's really important that the CEO remind council that you're actually cheating your point, or you're actually cheating the rest of council. And I didn't get too worried about it if it was a counselor at a director level. Any lower than that, and I would not be very happy. But I would be in constant conversation with the mayor, saying, you know, they're going directly, and I've told the councillor, but I need you now to step in and remind your council of what the ground rules are. And so it's constant, right? That's nothing you can do at the first week that you walk in there. It's something that I found over time has to be constantly reminded, because it undermines council. As you just pointed out, you feel as though you're not doing your job, because you can't go directly to staff. So it's undermining you, and that's why it's important.
Yeah, and that, I mean, what you're talking about is a very important point, right? That when bad behavior is perpetuated, then you think, well, am I supposed to be behaving like that? This is the responsibility, like I said, of the mayor and of the and the board chair. Get your team in order, right? It's not staff's job to babysit. You get your team in order, and you pull the team together, and you say, hey, you talk about those expectations and how you're going to conduct yourself collectively. Because what you're talking about, seen it lots of times, and it isn't fair, because then it perpetuates the hero complex, right?
Let's go to that mic over there. Yeah.
If you don't stick to them, you throw chaos into the organization, and you'll get less done in your strategy. Your priorities, please stick to them, and that's what we can do.
Yeah, good point.
Yep, absolutely. That is so key. Or you create a schizophrenic organization that is scattered and getting nothing accomplished, right? And then guess who takes the where's the blame during the next election? It's usually the staff. So, all right.
Yes, thank you. And my name is Ron Oberek. I'm Electoral Area Director, Okanagan Falls, in the Regional District, Okanagan Similkameen. I have two questions, or two points. The first one is, we didn't speak when we did the round table, but our table discussion was very interesting. The suggestion was made that the board listen to staff, and I know Christine has emphasized that already. I asked the people at my table, do you listen? And they all said yes, and I thought I listened too. And so then I asked, well, why? And they said, well, so you can understand better, because too often the people at the board table just want to talk. They don't seem to want to listen. And then I said, well, do you have people at your board table who don't listen? And every one of us said yes. So we know it's not us. It's obviously the other people.
Other people.
And that's interesting because it's true. And what I notice at my board table, and I heard this from people who I just met minutes ago, it appears to be not only in the regional district, Okanagan-Similkameen, the municipal appointed directors have a habit. I can name them and I won't. They've told me. They don't listen. They tell me. They don't pay attention. They say, if it doesn't have something to do with my community, I don't pay attention. Maybe that's something we can do better because staff might presume that we're actually listening. And I'm not sure that we always are. And the second is a question on the surprise rule. I am a huge fan of no surprise rule. My question is it a two-way street? My predecessor and many at the board table, since I've been elected, have told me they feel surprised by staff and CAO. Now, I think it's real important that it's a two-way street, but I'd like to hear an answer from people with more experience than me. Thanks.
From a CAO point of view, absolutely it's a two-way street. I've had more than one mayor to say to me, look, you run the place, just no surprises. And Walter Gray, first thing he said to me as the mayor, just don't surprise me. If you think something's going off the rail, let's come on in, let's have a coffee, let's talk about it. If you even think it could go off the rail, come in and we'll talk about it. I think all too often we try, the worst thing we could do is to try to think, well, maybe it's going off the rail. Maybe it's not. I'll just wait. And I just think it's really important. The city manager in Edmonton was fired because the LRT that they spent billions on didn't work. And he got fired not because it was a total botch up. He got fired because he didn't tell council it wasn't working until he couldn't hide it anymore. And that's why he got fired. And so I think it is a two-way street.
Andy Adams, mayor of the city of Campbell River. And I just wanted to go a little bit further on what Ron was talking about, the one employee model, and how it may not be realistic to expect for medium and larger size communities for the CEO to be the sole point of contact. And that's where we will have members of council go to the director level and not further. But the one thing that's really important is that for the director or the member of council is when you're coming out of that and you're doing a communication or an email, you're copying the CAO and copying all of council.
Yeah.
And you'll have situations where I'll be sitting in my office and I'll see two councilors out in the parking lot having a discussion. And you want to make sure that that discussion is shared with all of council, not coming back into a council meeting with an agenda. So that everything is open and that kind of goes on the no surprise rule, not just from council to staff, but council to council as well.
And I think that's where you sometimes see the email council meetings. And that's a red flag, right? When three councilors are sending emails back and forth, on but nobody else is in that loop. That's a red flag that you have a problem.
Arjun Singh, City of Kamloops. So really appreciate Christina and Ron's presentation. One of the things I was wondering about was when there's problems from the staff side around the relationship and what maybe some of the top things that happen there and how we as councilors or board directors, not even the mayor or chair, how we can work with those sometimes when they arise. So, you know, there are sometimes issues that come from the staff side in the relationship and maybe you can just talk about, you talked about this, the CEO in Edmonton who got fired. Maybe there's other things that are kind of relatively not common but that do happen. And what can we do in terms of our own roles, not being obviously staff managers, to sort of talk about that at all, if there's any possibility.
One of the things that I would suggest that you do, that you, again, that you, as a collective, like as a governing body, that you sit down with your CAO and say, okay, what does a healthy relationship look like? And define it. Define it for staff, define it for elected officials, and everybody have a conversation about, this comes back to the expectations thing, right? Creating some expectations, here's what I expect. I know a healthy, and nail down that healthy relationship. And then collectively, do we agree on this? Do we agree? And how, here's a question. How are we gonna hold ourselves to account? Put the question out there. And I would, and again, I would suggest that would be the mayor or the chair. How can I hold you to account to this behavior? What do we agree on that if you don't conduct yourself like this, what are we going to do? And talk about that so that you're actually, everyone's adults. You're all adults. You have a leadership position. It is a position of honor. Like, we need to bring respectability back to politics, right? Let's bring that level of respectability and honor back to that and back to that position and hold it with a great measure of respect. So the way you conduct yourselves as adults is really important. How are we going to hold ourselves to account in this position? That's really key. It's ownership, right? Look in the mirror and find out, okay, what can I be doing better? But have that conversation and establish those ground rules. So one more comment and then we're going to,
No, that's fine. You have time for one more comment.
She's on a roll. Yeah, she's on a roll.
You have time for one more comment.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Well, you know, on Arjun's last point there, yeah, I think the place to establish that, and it's the same thing, is really at the orientation. I think the most important thing you do at orientation is let everybody get to know each other, get to know why you wanted to be elected, what was important to you. And it's just a conversation. It's not a strategic plan or priorities. It's just why I'm here. And vice versa. Why is the CAO here? Well, why are they here? Why? What's important? And then to work out what I used to call the rules of engagement. And when things go off the rail, this is how we're going to deal with it, right? This is the way we're going to act. And I think setting out the rules of engagement, or you called it expectations, as early as you can with reminders is one of the most important things you could do to stop things from going too bad too long.
So Al said something funny to me a couple minutes ago, and he said he's been an elected official for a long time, and he said when he first got elected, he said, I thought there was a huge problem with the bureaucracy. He said, I'm going to get in there and fix that. And then he said, all these years being an elected official, he said, there's something wrong with the politicians. So that's actually how I'm going to close. I'll leave. I didn't say it. That was Al. So thank you so much. I know there's so many things we could have dug into today, and I really appreciate your willing participation. And we're going to wrap this up, and Ron and I are going to be around. We can chat and enjoy the rest of the conference.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Christina and Ron. It's been a pleasure for the LGMA to partner with the LGLA to bring this session to you, and we look forward to building on this partnership for future opportunities. I just don't want you to forget to take a moment to fill out your survey, as your feedback is very important to us. I'm told there are refreshments available in the ballroom, and we have a little less than 30 minutes before the next session.